Welcome back to another episode of Run Yogi Diaries. This is your host, Santosh Shiva. If you're new to the channel, please do remember to subscribe. If you like this conversation, hit like and leave your comments below and let us know what you think. Excited to have in the house today, Amit Bhosle, a ultra runner who's been at it for over a decade, starting as a road runner, transitioning into mountaineering, and then, of course, the world of ultras. And most recently, he completed his first 100 miler, and there's an interesting story behind it. He also makes sure his family is a part of his journey. We find his approach very straightforward, linear, and something easy to follow for most of us. Let's dig in, get behind the scenes. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Hey, Amit, welcome to Run Yogi Diaries.
Hey, Santosh. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. You know, we've been in touch for a while, and I've seen some of the amazing stuff you do out there. You're lucky to be living amongst mountains and beautiful nature, and you make sure you make the best use of it. Been following your running journey as well. So we're here to talk about all of that. But let me maybe take a quick stab at introducing you, and then we'll go from there.
Sure thing.
So Amit, you have been running, of course, for about 10 plus years. You have an interesting journey of running on the road, on running ultras. You're a mountaineer, originally from India, from Pune, I think, and Bangalore, if I recall, you told me.
Pune slash Bangalore.
Married, you have a son, you're a parent, and you work in the tech industry. Been doing that for some time as well. Live in the Seattle area. What did I miss?
I think that is pretty much it. I grew up in India. My dad was in the army, so we grew up all over India. We finally settled in Pune. We are Maharashtrians. We've been living in the Seattle area, me, my wife, and our son, he's 17 now, in the Seattle area since 2006. It's been a while here. And like you mentioned, being in the tech industry, the ideal place for me would have been the Bay Area. But the outdoors is the reason why we are in Seattle. The Pacific Northwest outdoors is just fabulous.
Nice.
Can't say that enough.
Lovely. Yeah, maybe, as we dig into the conversation, you can give us a sense of what you mean by that. For some people who are listening who may not have an idea about exactly what's there. So we'll definitely, have you walk us through that. So, maybe we should spend some time doing a bit of a flashback here and going back in time a little bit in terms of what got you started, into running and all that good stuff. So maybe take us back, Amit, how did it all start for you?
Like I briefly mentioned, my dad was in the army, right? So he was very much focused on fitness. He had his own fitness journey. And me and my elder brother, I have one sibling. He's 3 years elder to me. So my dad tried to get both of us to run, regularly a little bit. 2 miles was his ideal distance every day. So he tried getting us to run, and we would run every now and then. But I never really took to running during my growing up years. My dad even set up rules like for me and my brother that if you want something, like you want to go see a movie or you want to buy some new equipment or whatever, you have to do X number of miles of running and then you can get it. So it ended up being that whenever we needed something, we would do those miles and that's about it. So that was, just a brief look into our growing up.
At least it wasn't a punishment.
Yeah.
you didn't develop a PTSD relationship with running, that could have happened, right?
It could have, yeah. But, my dad used to be with us on most of the runs. But nice. we did the running part whenever we absolutely needed to. Then, now flash forward to 2006, 2008 kind of time frame. We had moved to the US. I had actually become quite overweight. And, you know, my son was...
Prosperous.
Sign of prosperity.
Sign of prosperity, right?
My son, now this is, I think, 2008, 2009. My son was about 3 years old. I was like 210 pounds in that range. And one time my son mentioned that, and, you know, being a three-year-old toddler, he started to think that, you know, being fat is good. So he once mentioned to me and my wife that he wants to grow up and become fat like daddy. That's basically when it hit me that I need to get, you know, some things in order. So I went through a weight loss period. That time I bought a treadmill, incline trainer. I put in a lot of work, and I became very careful about my diet. My wife is, you know, a lifelong vegetarian. Now she's also been plant-based for several years now. But her cooking also helped a lot, more healthy cooking.
On that part, right? So, you know, when we talk about the weight, I mean, it's a spectrum, right? Because 210 pounds actually doesn't mean much unless you put it in the context of a height, right? And all, yeah. or how you feel. And you know, weight itself is such a subjective thing. You know, there is genuine obesity, right, which affects people's well-being, ability to function, and there is a medical reason people are asked to lose weight. And then there is this whole sensitivity to body shapes, and, you know, there are certain body shapes that tend to be a little bit on the, you know, chubbier side. Some people are born skinny, and it doesn't mean the skinny people are healthy. Doesn't mean that the chubbier people are unhealthy. You know, there's a whole, it's very complex and nuanced.
Right.
So I'm sure, so coming back to that, what you were saying, what was driving your need to say, was it because you were feeling uncomfortable, or you're feeling unhealthy, or was it more of, hey, you know, there is a way that I need to be, and that's going to, that kind of triggered off your decision to lose weight?
Yeah, great points, Santosh. So to put in context, you know, I'm 6 feet tall, 210 pounds, puts me at about 28, 29 BMI index. And BMI index by itself is not a great measure of success, health. Because, you know, if you are very muscular, then you will have a high BMI. But I was right. I was not muscular. I just had a lot of fat and weight on me. Ideal weight, you know, ignoring the muscularity part, I think ideal weight for my height would be around 160, 170, maybe 170, 75, maybe even 180 pounds. So I clearly had a lot of extra baggage on me. I definitely did feel unhealthy from the physical perspective. You know, I was not doing any outdoor activities or exercises. We used to do, you know, some family hikes, some easy, not hikes, call them more like walks, walks in outdoors. But that was pretty much the extent of what I was doing at that point. And I knew I used to do much better than before, because, you know, during my growing up years, or even college days, I was definitely doing more. So I knew about that. And that's basically why I realized that I need to get myself in better shape, not just for my own self, but also to, you know, make sure that my son has the right ideas about what's fit versus not.
So it was more of... I would say, you know, in your case, I mean, see, when you talk to different people, people have different motivations for losing weight. But I think in your case, it was, you have a certain standard or a certain expectation of how you should feel and look, and it comes from your own, background of having grown, had a life, active lifestyle. you find yourself in the situation at a certain point in your life saying, hey, you know, something's not okay because I don't feel as good as I used to be. And that yeah. kind of seems to have triggered off your journey, right? Because I also want people who listen to this to have that understanding that different people have different reasons to take on a fitness journey, and all of them are valid as long as you get on the journey, right? It doesn't matter how you get there, right? But as long as you get on the journey, that's that is fine. So makes sense. Yeah. So you started, and let's get back to your journey. Then what happened?
Yeah, so within those 6 to 9 months period where I was actively trying to reduce weight, I managed to get rid of like 40 pounds, get down to the more 170 pounds kind of range. And I was doing it mostly indoors on the treadmill using the incline training. And that was more and healthier eating or watching my calories. I don't know if I want to put it in the healthier eating bucket, but at least I was counting calories in.
My focus. How were you doing that? How were you counting calories? Was it an app or something, or more mental math?
2008, 2009, I wasn't using many apps. But it was mostly, keeping an eye on what I'm eating and having a rough idea of, how many calories would there be. And there were some numbers around, like sometimes when I used to have a Subway for lunch or dinner, now they have their published numbers. So I used to use those.
Makes sense.
But no scientific way of tracking calories. Now, after about 6 to 8 months of doing that, I kind of started getting bored of the indoor treadmill exercises, and summer also had just started up here in Seattle area. So I started doing going outdoors. Started with a 1 mile run, 2 mile run in the parks, neighborhood parks. And later that year, I visited India. I met up with some older friends. Some of them were doing half marathons at that time. And then that kind of gave me an idea that I was by that time I was doing like 7-8 kilometers distance. So that gave me an idea. Maybe I can try a 10K. I can try a half marathon. And that's how I progressed. I had my I think then I came back in December. In Jan, I did my first 5K with Asha as a training run with them. Then later that in March, and there's that festival here. I forgot the name of that. St. Patrick's Day. So we had I did the first. That time they used to have a 6K race here in the Seattle area. So I did that. Later that summer I did a 10K
and this was what year?
This was 2011. And then December of that year I did my first half marathon in Las Vegas, the Rock and Roll Las Vegas. From there on, I did a few half marathons. I graduated to the full marathon distance in 2013, and then I think for me it was. And other thing I forgot to mention, I always liked outdoors and hiking or walking kind of activities on the trails, on the mountains. So. From there, I just thought I would. And during one of our hikes, I had seen some trail runners who were running up and down the trail. And I was actually very surprised that, people even do running on trails. We can just manage to walk. So that was very, I still distinctly remember that. And I even mentioned to my friend that, people, look at these guys, they're running on the trails. Right.
So one thing that so while you were so I get it that it was you were making almost a linear progression in terms of your running, right? You started small, you lost weight, classical linear progression. Now, how are you feeling in these times? You started 6K, 10K, you went on to half marathon end of that year, and then signed up for a full. How are you feeling generally, physically? Were you feeling strong? Were you, you know, give us a sense of what was going on there.
Yeah, these were, you know, very initial initial times in my fitness journey. So I think physically I was feeling fine. I mean, they were they felt great achievements at that time, obviously. I was still not pushing myself to my limits till then. Right. The first marathon was definitely hard. I remember the classic wall at 20 mile. I definitely did experience that. But I did finish it in a fairly decent time, 4 hours and a couple of minutes. So there were the obvious goals around improving the times for these distances. So I was trying to do that, but not in a very structured manner. I had found some training plans online, trying to follow them. Physically, I felt that, you know, I could keep progressing in those dimensions. I could add to the distance. I could, you know, try and chip off some times, some minutes.
All right.
So these were challenges. I was able to meet them and continue to push myself. You know, I had also, by that time, now we are talking about 2014-15 kind of time frame. Done a few half marathons, a couple of marathons by then. My son had grown up. He was almost like 8 or 10 years old. By that time, so I had started bringing him also to the smaller races, 5Ks, 10. He has been doing 5Ks and 10Ks for a long. I think like 6 or 7 years old he was when he did his first 5K. So my wife and my son, all of us were doing maybe different distances or maybe the same distance in the events, but at least it was a, you know, family activity kind of thing. Which
that's interesting. So you made it a family affair. That's good.
I'll talk more about that later also. You're right. I mean, it is a very linear progression. Gradually increasing the distances, or even within a specific distance, trying to improve the time part of it. Going back to the trails. Some friends here, and actually there was also a mountaineering part to it. Given my interest in outdoors and trails, Seattle, you know, Pacific Northwest has, you know, some of the most beautiful outdoors here in the US, especially for the summer part. Most of the country is I think too hot than ideal. Pacific Northwest is just ideal. Summer is the reason why people stay here, I think. And there's also the winter part of it for skiing.
So no rains. So we've heard it rains a lot in Seattle. So what happens during summer? Less rains?
It doesn't rain a lot, man. It rains only like maybe 9 months. But also the rains are they're not hard rains. I mean, you can basically just ignore the rains. You don't need an umbrella or a raincoat. Anyone wearing that or using those is clearly a tourist here. So that's how you identify tourists in crowds.
So kind of easy, drizzly kind of rain. Yeah, so you can survive it. It's not thunderstorms. You can still be outdoors kind of thing. Okay, got it.
Mostly drizzling. Summers we don't get now. The actually, you know, comparing to 2006-07 time frame when we moved here, those days it used to be 3 months of summer, I think. Now we have started getting, you know, pretty much four to five months of summer. Have very decent summer. The good days start in, you know, May, June. You start getting nice sunny days. July, August, September is beautiful summer. sometimes many days of October are also pretty good. So
global warming is helping you guys for sure.
Global warming is a real thing. Some people call it fake news, but but it's a real thing. We are seeing it here.
Sure. All right. So we were back. So getting back to, you know, so you did your full marathon. You were talking about the mountaineering aspect, kind of entering your journey. Yeah, let's tell us about that.
Yeah. So I had a few friends, you know, Dhaval, who had been doing mountaineering much mm-hmm. before me. And then he suggested that I take a course here. So there is a nonprofit club here called the Mountaineers, and they offer a mm-hmm. lot of courses in mountaineering. So I did a basic alpine climbing course with them. It's a fairly lengthy course. Like I think total would be about 6 months, mm-hmm. but very detailed instructions, in-person instructions, field trips. That's everything, right? And after about three months of instruction, the actual field trips and climb start. I did that course with them. It was a you know, very good course. Then after that, we also started doing, and Arnab was here. That's when I started doing more activities with Arnab and Dhaval. Mm. And we did a few climbs here in the Pacific Northwest Mountains. I did the Mount Rainier with the Mountaineers as part of mm-hmm. my graduation climb. And then with Dhaval and Arnab, we did more Mount Baker, Mount Hood, some of the popular local mountains. St. Helens St. Helens is not in that category, but still.
So how was it for you? How was summiting Mount Rainier or some of these peaks? How did you feel about them?
Mount Rainier was amazing because you know, it is a really beautiful mountain It's visible from the Seattle area, so it's everyone knows about Mount Rainier here. The other mountains you don't see directly from the city, but everyone knows Mount Rainier. So when I started, I had always, you know, wondered how it would be to be at the top of the mountain, or when I did the course with them, Mount Rainier definitely was you know, one of the main goals, like a bucket list item. Right. And that I would someday climb this. And even in the, you know, I said that I did it as part of the one of the graduation climbs. So that is, you know, the graduation climb is basically in the mountaineers during the course, all the climbing leads, they offer to take students on, you know, to certain mountains and areas. But Mount Rainier climb gets filled up very quickly because everyone wants to go to Mount Rainier. Right. So I was actually somewhat lucky to find a spot in one of those trips.
That's great. That's terrific. So now, when did ultras enter the scene? How did that happen?
Yeah, so even the mountaineer, and the reason I mentioned mountaineering was mountaineering is somewhat already in the ultra space, at least on the time dimension. Right. So the Rainier climb for us was a day and a half, which included a camp, a night at the base camp. But we started at, you know, 8 or 9 a.m. on the first day. We climbed to the base camp, set up camp there, slept overnight, and slept there and started at midnight from the camp to the summit, came back, and then, you know, wrapped up our camp, and then went down to the parking lot. So the summit day itself was close to 18-19 hours of the day for us, moving, climbing, coming down, fairly intense physical activity. So, you know, 18-19 hours is already at least, and the distance was not in the ultra space, but from the time dimension and view, it was already there. And that's very similar to long ultras, right? I mean, time is one of the key factors, even more so than the distance, though technically, you know, there is a distance part to the ultra marathon distance. But I think so that's where mountaineers, my experience in mountaineering and my interest in mountaineering, that again naturally lead. So I was doing mountaineering, I was doing running, road running. I was doing some hiking. I think it's getting into ultra running on the trails is a very natural, progression, if you ask me.
Yep. Makes sense. You know, when I was reading your blog, and you, by the way, congratulations on completing your first 100 miler, right?
Thank you.
You are in the 100 miler club, which is kind of a graduation for serious ultra runners, right? So maybe we should double click on that a little bit, right? And you have a fascinating, you know, story about your first finish of 100 miler. So maybe let's get into that. Give us a sense of A, what got you interested to sign up for 100 miler, and let's get behind the scenes on that first finish.
Sure thing. So, you know, I had gotten into, like I was talking, so after marathons, you know, there are a whole bunch of trail races that happen here in the Seattle area, around Seattle area. I did a 50K. My first 50K was Baker Lake 50K, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a lovely course along the coast of Baker Lake in the Mount Baker area. I did that. I took a pause. I was planning to go very, you know, increase my distances pretty slowly. So I did 150K, and then next year I did the same race, which was my, you know, second 50K. But after that, I thought I'd, you know, it's after being 2 years at the 50K level, then I thought I'll start increasing the distance. So I tried a 50 miler. In Badger Mountain. Actually, I'm wearing the
we can see that now.
Badger Mountain Challenge. It's a race that happens in Eastern Washington, in the Tri-Cities area. It's one of our favorite, because it's, you know, very approachable and fairly local. It's only 3 hours drive from here, and very, very well organized race. So I did the 50 miler there. And by that time, you know, Arnab had also started, Arnab and Naval, they had also started getting into the ultra distance trail running. Prior to that also, we were doing trail runs, but more as fitness for mountaineering, not trail running by for itself. Anyway, so after 50 miles, and then, you know, I was able to finish the 50 mile distance fairly comfortably. It was definitely challenging, but
so what did you you know, while you were ramping up to do the 50 mile, did your volume of running go up significantly? Did you change something on that as well?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've, from running volume perspective, you know, I used to be in the 30 to 40 miles a week range when I was doing road running.
Okay.
For the ultra preparations for ultra, especially the 50 milers, I did definitely get into the more like around the 50 mile a week range. But the difference, another key difference there was now, A lot of training started happening on trails instead of roads or treadmill.
Right.
And trails, they require a lot more time for the same distance. So it was a lot more training time, not just the distance. I think distance by itself is not enough as a metric to measure, especially if you include trails and include all the elevation up and down. So I was definitely, you know, devoting more time towards training, and the training did training was going well, at least for the distances I was targeting. 50 mile was a success. And later that year, I think this is 2017. Later that year, I tried a 100K in again a local race here. It's called the Pigtails Pigtails Challenge. Pigtails is a local local legend. Van Fan is her name. Actually, she was in the race also yesterday at Cascade Crest, and that was her 99th 100 miler. Amazing.
Wow.
So anyway, so I did the 100K. The 100K, this one that I did is not a technical 100. It's not a trail 100K. It was just more like a paved road around a lake. So that was a success. And then, you know, thoughts started occurring to me that I should try the 100-mile distance. 100-mile is, you know, it's kind of like the marathon distance. If you are in the road running sub-ultra space, the way people think of, at least that's how I think of it.
Right.
The way people think of how to, you know, the marathon distance being the ultimate distance in road running or the sub-ultra space, somewhat similar that in the ultra space, you have to get to the
100 mile.
There is no such a requirement here, but because everything from 50K upwards is actually everything from 27 miles upwards is ultra space.
Right.
So I started thinking about trying a 100 mile and the same course, Badger Mountain Challenge, they had a 50 miler, they have a 100 miler and few other distances. Again, a very local race, logistics are much simpler there. So I thought I'll give that a shot. And right around that time, Arnab and Dhaval also started thinking that, okay, they will also try this. So that was my first attempt. I think that was in 2019 or 2020. No, actually, sorry, not 2020. 2020 was the COVID year. So I think 2019 was when I first tried the 100 miler in Badger Mountain. What I had not realized that at that point is, you know, 100 miler and, you know, basically the extremely long time events, they are much more of a mental challenge than they are, you know, than the physical part of it. So that's what got to me. By about the 40-50 mile mark in that race, I'd started having doubts about, I am only at 40 mile mark, there is, you know, more than 2.5 times the total distance still remaining, or whatever, more than 1.5 times the distance still remaining. That is a strategy for disaster.
Let's zoom in that moment, right? That's very interesting because that's something a lot of everyone who is into long distance running of any kind deals with. So let's zoom into that moment when you are attempting your first 100 miler. You're this 40th mile, and you're having these thoughts going through your head, right? But what about the physical sense? I mean, were you okay physically at that point, or was that causing this whole doubt, self-doubt that was going on?
Yeah, no, well, 40 miles. So I was at the, you know, 40 around the 40 mile mark. 40 miles itself is a fairly long distance, right?
Of course.
The body will start experiencing some pain in, you know, maybe your quads, maybe your hamstrings or other parts of the body, just because even by that time it was like, you know, close to 10 hours if not more of being on the mountains and on the trails, putting your body through that. So there is going to be obvious discomfort even at the 40 mile mark, and that's when I think that is the trigger why doubts start creeping in. It's like I'm at 40 mile mark, I'm already feeling like shit, I'm going through so much pain. How am I going to do another 60 miles from here? And there is also the unknown about there is a night time coming. It's going to be dark. And in long distances, the runners and participants, they get spread out very quickly. Even if, you know, at the start line, there may be like 200 people starting with you. In maybe 2-3 hours, everyone finds, you know, their own pace And many times you have to just be alone for a long time.
Right.
No one to talk to. So I think that's after 10 hours, 8-10 hours, then that's when, and you know, whatever the obvious discomforts are that you're experiencing, they are the trigger for more doubts. And I think I've read about it. Your brain will just try to give you ideas to find reasons to quit. The easiest thing
that
is
was what
stop
was happening and, for you. So that was what was happening for you on that day.
Definitely. I mean, I also had a foot injury at that point. So there was more doubt that, you know, whether my heel is going to be able to sustain another 60 miles or not. And that was all, I think it was all mind games. So, you know, and in the next, you know, at 40 miles, I started, or, you know, whatever, roughly 40 miles, I started thinking about these things. And, at, you know, in the next 5 miles or so, I'd kind of given up already. I decided that, and there was an option to stop at the 50 mile mark and, you know, just take the 50 mile medal and walk away.
Right.
So I thought, you know, that's, for me, again, the self-doubts came up, but maybe I'm not trained enough. I have to do more training, be better prepared, and then, you know, I can always try it next time. Try the 100-mile distance next time. So I stopped at the 50-mile mark, took my 50-mile medal and went away.
Well, at least it was not a DNF. You walked away at least with the 50-mile medal, so that's a consolation. a lot of folks who finished like 85 miles and they didn't finish and they wouldn't get even a medal for that. It's a DNF, right?
So yeah, it's a double-edged thing, right? I did get a 50-mile medal, but then that also played into me making the decision that at least I can get a medal, some medal.
Yeah,
and go away with at least something to show for it.
Right.
But you know, if I think back on it, I had already done the 50-mile race twice before 2019. So if I think back on it, I should have just tried to push more. And even if I had DNF'd at 70-mile, it would have been better, I think, because at least I improved my own PR for the distance.
Right.
Than just getting a third 50-mile medal, which doesn't mean anything to anything else. It doesn't mean anything except for my own self. And anyways,
so good. So let's fast forward, right? So you did. That was your first attempt, but then you completed. You successfully finished your 100 mile a couple of months back, correct? Or last year.
No, so we're talking about 2019. So after the Badger Mountain, you know, failed attempt, I had more attempts. We signed up for the Bryce Canyon 100-mile race. My training was going well, so I thought, you know, and I had realized by that time, based on the Badger attempt, that, you know, there are going to be mental aspects to the actual activity, to the actual attempt. So I thought, I have some more experience to rely on and to use. So we gave a shot to, I went to, again, Bryce Canyon 100-mile race. Dhawal and Arnab were also participating in that same race. And we had, you know, more friends coming from other places, other parts of the country to just also have a get together of sorts. Now the interesting thing about, so Bryce Canyon 100 itself was a physically much more challenging event. The entire race happens at a very high altitude. I think if you want to know, you know, I would say the average elevation would be about close to 9,000 feet, 8,500 to 9,000 feet of altitude. The gain and loss is about 15,000 feet in that. But the entire race happens at a fairly high altitude. And I was, you know, definitely not prepared for that altitude at all. Seattle is at sea level. you know, we can go to the mountains here and where we can train. You can probably get to like 3,000, 4,000 feet altitude, and you can train at that altitude. But 8,000, 9,000 feet is completely different. So I I did, so the first 35 miles of that were fairly comfortable. It was still at it was about 8,000 feet at 8,000 feet. But after that, the course climbed almost to 9,000 feet, and that climb itself was pretty strenuous. I was having a very tough time just breathing at that altitude. And again, then at that time, the thoughts were that, you know, why did I even think of coming to such a high altitude race? I haven't trained for it at all. Blah blah blah, and you know, again, at roughly the 50 mile mark, it was a physically much more exhausting race. I was in, you know, much worse condition than the Badger Mountain in the previous episode. So here at the 50 mile mark, I gave up. I was also cramping a lot by that time. I got to, I think that aid station was at mile 54, and that's where I threw in the towel.
So Amit, one thing that I'm taking away, you know, I think it's fair to go out and attempt and not be able to finish. But I also hear that maybe there was some level of preparation that was missing in these races. And maybe for those of others who are listening to this and can take away a few lessons from your own experience, does it make sense to hire a coach, right? And you're taking on somebody, something as big as this, who can tell you ahead of time that, hey, you know, you should be preparing for these things. So you know, you don't have to learn it the hard way. In your case, you did, right? But you don't have to necessarily go through that process of learning it the hard way, because ultimately you did finish a 100 miler, but it came through a process of multiple attempts. So let's jump into that. As to what did you do right to finish your first 100 miler?
So I think that's a great question. And, you know, my key explanation for that is, by the way, just going back to your question, hiring a coach or having someone to talk to who has a lot more experience, that definitely is super useful. You know, like you said, I did learn it the hard way. But I have not hired a coach yet. I have a lot of friends now who do absolutely crazy things in the ultra space, and they are all you know, several of them.
They have been your guests on the show.
So now I have access to, you know, a set of very well experienced, very well experienced set of people who are, you know, happy to give advice, provide guidance based on their, obviously, their own experience and achievements.
So let's zoom into the 100 miler. Let's zoom into the 100 miler. Yeah. Let take us there in terms of what did you do? Like in a quick, give us a sense of what did you change to get that done after all these different
So physically, I think my preparation had been good right from the start. The training had been going well. except for maybe the high altitude part of it, that was a special case. But I tried some more races also, at least one more race after Bryce also, and you know, I had DNF there also. I think what worked for me when I finally was able to get to the 100 mile finish was the mental aspect of it. I mean, at the back of my mind, maybe subconsciously, I always had an option of, you know, not finishing the race. What's the big deal in not finishing? I tried it. I made a sincere effort, but I'm not able to do it. So, you know, what can I do? I'll stop. And what finally worked is, after, you know, multiple failed attempts, was deciding right at the beginning, that no matter what, I'm not going to stop. Don't give yourself an option to quit at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually what worked. And, you know, my first finish was in Oregon Cascades 100, which was a brand new race here in Oregon, pretty close to Seattle area. The course was very similar to, the course was, 13,000 feet of elevation gain and loss. It was in the middle of summer, fairly high temperatures. So challenging, fairly challenging course. But I definitely would have DNF'd if I had decided, if I had not decided to keep sorry to go back on this, too many negatives there. But if I had given myself an option to quit, I would have definitely, quit also. But that, I think, and that's why I mentioned earlier also, in the extremely long activities, you will go through periods where you are suffering. Your body, your quads will be hurting, your glutes will be hurting, even your upper body will be experiencing pain all over. But if you use that as a reason to stop, then that's the end of it. And especially in these extremely long period activities, well over 24, 30 hours, it's a roller coaster. You will feel terrible at some parts of the activity, but surprisingly, during those low periods, you would not even imagine that you will start to feel better, but it does happen. You go through those low and dark periods, and if you just keep pushing through it, basically you trust your training, have faith in that, then you eventually you come out of that low period. So that's that was from my own analysis, that was the main difference between my successful attempt and all my DNFs.
Well, congratulations, you got it done.
Thank you.
So you're in the Hundo Club now.
Yeah.
that's very interesting. That's quite it's an important wisdom that you're sharing here, Amit. And there are some folks, you talk to first attempt to get it done, boom, boom, boom. And there is also times, and I've had other guests on the show who had multiple DNFs before they got the first one done, right? And but the point, I think the point of takeaway is that you didn't give up, right? You didn't after your first DNF or first 50 milers, that the first 100 miler that you just ended up with 50 miler, you didn't say, hey, this is it, I'm not going to try again. Right. There's a certain level of tenacity that you have developed, which is a great takeaway for others who are going to try this, right? And a lot of times, people are scared to start a journey, right? Thinking that, I don't know whether I'll be able to do it. It could be as something as, for somebody who's never run, it could be just a 10K or a half marathon itself, right? Not necessarily a 100 miler. It could be, depending on where you are in your journey, you could be in a mindset that I'm not going to try because I don't think I can do it. But looking at your journey, that's one thing we can all learn, is that, you keep trying until you get it done, right? And then you successfully completed your hundo. So that's one takeaway definitely from your journey, right, Amit, that I can talk about. And the other thing is, like you said, right, I was reading this book called Endure by Alex Hutchinson, great book to read. And he was talking about this fact that a lot of times, especially as endurance athletes, you kind of have to learn to separate real pain from premature, alerting that happens in your brain. Because by design, the brain is going to panic at the slightest of discomfort. But there is a real risk, physical pain that happens. And then there is this second part, which is a premature warning system. And you have to learn to discern the two and decide how to move forward, right? And I guess in your journey, that's evident as well.
Yeah, I think, That's a great point, actually. You know, even in all my training over a dozen years or more, I've had my fair share of, more than my fair share of injuries. Right? You know, you don't, it's not easy to recognize a particular discomfort as a real injury or you know, just a temporary discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where, so during a race, whether you really are injured or is, you know, just mind games, I think that will depend a lot on how well you have trained for that event. So for me, you know, I never had a real injury per se during a race. But I would think, at least, you know, based on my training experience, I can, and after having so many injuries, you know, I can identify a discomfort as injury versus not. But yeah, that is definitely a great point to bring up. You can't obviously identify or differentiate between the two right. cases.
And that's where you need to, you know, talk to people who have experience, talk to professionals. And again, I just want to make sure as a disclaimer, you know, we're not suggesting that you do this yourself. Get a medical, you know, support.
If you are in pain, for myself, you know, if I have a discomfort which goes more than a day or maybe more than 2 days, you know, my philosophy is just leave it to the expert. So I go to my doctor. Yeah. Take a look at it. Worst case is that, you know, I've just given him that, you know, I've spent the $25 of copay. In the grand scheme of things, that's nothing.
That's nothing.
And the other case where it was a real injury that would have become worse if it hadn't been checked out. I don't want to be in that situation.
Right. So great. Perfect. That makes sense. And you know, again, congratulations on your 100 miler. I think we got a sense of how your journey started and how you built it. And you know, thanks for taking us through the details of how you know you pivoted into mountaineering and into ultras and how you got to the first 100 miler. Now, kind of. Pivoting into a slightly different direction, you know, and I think just also in the interest of time, I want to take a few minutes and have you maybe summarize today, after all these years, right, of what you're doing.
Right.
Give our listeners a summary of maybe your top 3 or 4 or 5. Hey, here are the 5 things now I believe that are working for me that people can kind of take back to their own training.
All right, great topic. Yeah, definitely. The first one, you know, based on what we also discussed, I think for me, the first one is, especially for long ultras, just know that, you know, there are going to be dark and low periods through the activity. And point being that, you know, don't keep quitting as an option at all on the table. If your mind knows that, you know, that option is there, it will find ways to trick you into taking that option. It has happened to me multiple times. And I've also, you know, it has also worked. And this as a strategy has worked also for me a few times now. That's the first one. Just, you know, be prepared to embrace the suck. Right? I mean, you're trying a 100 mile, 30 plus hour activity just for a you know, for sure, you will go through periods of discomfort. Have faith in your training, and just push through those low and dark periods, and know that you will come out on the other side.
You know, that's a great virtue to live by in general, not just for ultras, right? Sure. Just embrace the suck. it's a good tagline for just living life in general, right?
There is merchandise and, you know, hats with this logo. That's where I found it very, very interesting line.
All right.
So that is the first one. More practical tips is, I was never much into cross training, you know, for most of my running career, running journey. I used to think that, you know, I'm a runner, I'll just run and that should be enough. You know, in the past 4 or 5 years, ever since I got into, especially when I started doing a lot more trail running, strength training is you know, I am very diligent about that. And any form of cross training, I've also started doing a lot of cycling. So any type of cross training, I think, is should be a part of a healthy training routine. And you know, the strength training is also in the cross training category. You know, you can do swimming if you can, or cycling, or you know, mix it up with your main training of running, right. So to say.
But makes sense.
I have started devoting a lot of time to strength training. You know, that also takes care of avoiding injuries, especially for the, you know, the less used muscles. My ankles and knees have been weak historically, but you know, I've been having better time, better experience now.
Okay, makes sense.
And I think the third and final point I would like to suggest is, so especially for you know, long distance ultra training, you need to invest a lot of time. You know, your training routine, your weekends, you know, 6 to 8 hours of runs is not rare at all. And especially during the peak of your training, and they will become fairly routine, you know. Sometimes even both days of the weekend, you're away from home for, you know, 8 hours, and after a point that starts taking a toll. So you know, other thing I've been trying and fairly successfully at that is to start involving family members in the activities. So it becomes a family activity. You get your training done, and overall I need much fewer brownie points to do my 8 hour runs, because, you know, 4 of those hours are with the family. So and when I am with family, sometimes you know, given that everyone will be at their own pace, so a few tricks I try is either I carry a weighted pack, so that I can, you know, everyone can go at the same pace, but I am also getting my extra workout. Or or if I'm not doing that, then I will I'll run around them, or, you know,
right,
I call them yo-yos. But you run ahead, after 15 minutes you come back, find your family again, go past them, and just, you know, run around. At least you see them fairly frequently during that 4 hour, 3-4 hour of activity. So
I call them I call them pradakshinam, because you don't, you know, like in temples, you do pradakshinam of the deity, so you do pradakshinam of your family. You keep going out and coming back.
That's makes sense. That makes sense. And as a family also, we've been, you know, we've done a fair amount. We recently did a Seattle to Portland bike ride, which was a great adventure for the whole family. It also, you know, that thing also gives you more activities as a family to do. You know, both my son and wife, they have also done a few half marathons by now. So it's a good. The point I'm making is I don't have to go out alone for my training, because, you know, time away from the family is one of the biggest issues that you know, that is involved here, that makes the training more difficult. So I'm just trying to find ways to ease that aspect. So
terrific. No, those are great top three. And I think I also want to add if I may, on your behalf, the another thing that really stands out in your journey is that learning to not quit, right? That's a huge huge part of what has probably you know, what you're learning is, right? Which is to say, the back door is shut, you're in the race, you're going to get it done. Now, I do have a question with regards to that, Amit, is, so that's easier said than done, right? Now, what mantra did you develop to help you not quit, right? At that moment, you still experienced pain, you still experienced all the shutting down happening. So what did you learn to tell yourself at that point so that you could keep going? Maybe you can give us a sense of that as well, so that listeners can.
Great question. I think I have started, you know, I just talk to myself about my training. And I tell myself that, you know, we have gone through this before. I know there will be another hour or two where it will suck. But based on our experience, me and my other self, we know that we are going to come through on the other side.
All right, great. So makes a lot of sense. Thanks for sharing those tips. What next for you? What else are you cooking in your hundo journey or long distance endurance journey?
Next for me. So this year I have a couple more races remaining. I'm still working towards my biggest race of this year, of all my endurance journey. I have actually one race next weekend called White River 50. It's a 50 mile race in near here. And then after that is I'm going to give a shot to Bigfoot 200. So that's you know about Bigfoot 200. You've had several guests who have done it. So it's again my natural progression led me to that, though not exactly, but still.
Right. So Amit, that's great. That's again, thanks for sharing those summary of tips and experiences. I do want to pivot into the last part of our conversation, which is a fun Q&A round. Oops. And you ready for that?
Yeah. Let's go for it.
All right. So my favorite question for all my guests, I know we're all, kind of in a sense, fitness freaks. We give up a lot to pursue our passion for endurance. But we also love food. So my first question is, what is your favorite junk food, your indulgence?
Yeah, this is a tough choice. I like a lot of junk food. But if you want me to pick my first, I think I love vada pav. It's a deep fried goodie, but I just love it. Especially in the Pune Mumbai area, vada pav is one of the most famous fast food items there, especially with all the chutneys and the fried green chilies with that go with it.
Yeah,
and my wife makes it amazing at home also. So
nice.
Vada pav for me.
All right. And the next one is, what's your favorite way to spend a lazy day when you're not training?
Movies. Either at home or in the theater. Not particular about that, but we like to watch TV movies.
Nice. And again, that's with family. And
that's with family. That also lets me, it's an activity where I can just lie down and not move at all also.
Yeah.
After some hard training days, that works well on all angles.
Yeah, makes sense. Next one. What's the best compliment you've received for your lifestyle?
Let me think about that. So I don't remember the exact words, but many friends, whenever they see some of my activities, their reaction to it is quite fascinating. It's like it's unbelievable that people do these kind of activities. To them, it is unbelievable.
Yeah,
I take that as a compliment. I obviously, being connected to so many people who do even more crazier things, I'm still at the lower end of the spectrum. I have seen, people do insane things. But for most people, I think these things are somewhat unbelievable.
It's
good to know that at least their perspectives are expanding. They can also see what is possible, get an idea of, what is possible and things like that.
And what's the worst criticism you've received for your lifestyle?
Yeah, I think one person had once mentioned that all these activities, they are very selfish. It stuck with me. It is, you know, true in some sense, you know, being away from home for such long periods, there is a bit of selfishness involved there, definitely. Mm. Yeah, that one hurt.
So how do you take to such criticism?
And that's, you know, that's related to the other thing I was saying, that you try to make it more of a family activity so that some of that guilt goes away.
Yeah. Makes sense. All right. A bucket list race on your horizon?
Well, right now, definitely the Bigfoot 200. It will hopefully be a reality also. I mean, a successful finish there. But there are other crazy races. At some point, I have Badwater 135 on my list. It's a long way away from my fitness standards, but that is the other crazy one. And obviously, you know, how could I miss that? Western States. That's the ultimate bucket list. But again, I think the reason why I missed it is it takes, you know, it takes 5-6 years of qualifying and entering the lottery and whatnot. So it's a long way away. Yeah.
Nice. All right. Last question is, since you're a movie fan, it'd be even more interesting to get your perspective. If you made a movie of your life so far, A, what genre would you put it in? And B, who would you hire to play your role or your character?
I see. Interesting. Yeah, genre would, I think genre would be sports. Actually, maybe even running specific. Even within sports, maybe running specific. For actor, I think Farhan Akhtar. You know, he has been in quite a few sports focused movies, especially that Milka Singh movie. Plus, I also you know, played music a little bit, and Farhan Akhtar is a musician by himself, so I like Farhan Akhtar. So in general.
Oh, okay, nice. Farhan, there's a script on your way. And I didn't know you're a musician too. That's interesting.
Not that much. I used to play in my colleges and a little bit after that, but it's now most of my free time goes outdoors.
Well, what do you play?
I used to play the guitar and sing a little bit.
Okay, so that's another aspect we didn't know about you. Good to know. Awesome. Great. You did well on the, you know, the Q&A, the fun Q&A round. We learned a few more things in the process, including the fact that you're a musician, and maybe, I don't know, you know, next time we meet, we could have you some, you know, strum out some songs as well. All right. Hey, Amit, great conversation. And I know sometimes, you know, in that 1 hour or so to get someone's 10 plus year journey, you know, we only look at the highlights, but there's so much that goes in, right? You're capturing 10 years of learning and unlearning and putting things back. But the long story short, at least for me, from your journey, is don't give up, you know, be at it, you know, and hey, look, you completed a 100-miler, and now it gives you confidence to look at, aim for bigger, you know, bigger stuff, and you're already on it. So great to have that, you know, go through your journey. We're coming to an end of this kind of this conversation. I want to give you the last word, you know, any final message that you want to share with our audience.
Hey, Santosh, yeah, it was a great session talking to you. The final message is, you know, what we talked about, embrace the suck. just know that it is coming, and you know, be ready for it. You know, another statement I heard recently somewhere is, feeling tired and exhausted is not a good enough reason to stop. It's just know that that's what you signed up for.
That's great. Nice, great, great message. I think it's you know, the fact is that a lot of us who take on endurance sports as a hobby or passion, you know, ultimately sign up to embrace pain and, you know, embrace the suck. And on the other side, you know, there is a high that is there. And so it makes complete sense. Amit, again, thanks for taking the time out to share with us your journey. You enjoy the rest of the afternoon, and we'll keep in touch and we'll root for your future adventures.
Thank you, Santosh. Also, I just want to take a moment. Thank you for what you do here. You know, it's a very noble cause, if you ask me. Just spreading the word about, you know, the Indian origin people who are trying out, you know, these ultra adventures. Thank you for, you know, spending your personal time doing that. Really appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you. All right.
Bye-bye. All right. Yeah. Bye.